I loved you on Curb. It's one of my favorite episodes. The sweaters, wait. The sweater vest. What was a special one?
Wait, are you talking about the one where he breaks my glasses?
Yes, and you wear that sweater too when you're staring at the wire.
Yes, yes.
A special moment.
It's so interesting because I think of myself as this very easygoing, casual, very positive kind of guy. And I play the worst person in the world on Curb. Just like, maybe there's something about me that I don't quite realize.
Yeah. You're a very convincing asshole on this show.
Thank you.
At the top of the show, you heard comedian, author, and USC professor Wayne Fetterman, who's just released his brand new book, The History of Stand-Up, From Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle. The History of Stand-Up chronicles the evolution of the art form of American stand-up from its earliest pre-vaudeville practitioners like Artemus Ward and Mark Twain to present-day comedians. Wayne is also currently co-producing HBO's upcoming George Carlin documentary feature film with Judd Apatow. I'm Greg Bidet. You're listening to an ad-free episode of the Portland Podcast. Let's hear more now from Wayne, fresh from his appearance on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Hello.
Hello, hello, Wayne. This is Greg from Portland. I'm just doing a sound check. You sound really good, though.
Yes, I have it set up, I think, pretty well.
You do. And you had it set up great on Fallon. I thought you were about to break out the drums there.
You saw this in the background. I love it.
Yes, yes. And the movie That's posters.
That's my humble brag right there. It's like, oh, these drums? Oh, it's nothing.
So you have quite a history with Jimmy, right? You've worked together before. You've been on the show quite a few times.
Yeah, he used to open for me on the road.
Isn't that incredible? Wow, that's pretty incredible.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you've been around a while, and you've literally written the book on stand-up. This is what we're here to talk about today, the history of stand-up. And I love how you're passing the baton at the end of the book, like whoever's going to take on the rest of the history of stand-up. I really enjoyed that. You're passing the baton to the next generation of writers. Yeah. You're a professor. You're an author. You're a stand-up comic. It was an easy read. I was engrossed and straight from the beginning.
That makes me feel so great. Thank you for saying that. That was my goal for the whole thing.
Yeah. Actually, I even jumped to the podcast too to help fill in some of the pieces there for me. But it's well produced, the podcast, well edited, well put together. I know it takes a long time.
Yes, it takes about almost 50 hours for each 40-minute podcast.
Oh, you're kidding me! Wow,
you can write a book in that time. Including all the interviews, all the editing, all the re-editing. Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting. Right from the get-go, you touch on how stand-up comedy has kind of an expiration date, if you want to phrase it that way. Sometimes it doesn't age well.
I would say it's the exception when it does age well.
Yeah, and a great Burt Williams quote in the book about finding great acoustics, and it's a kind of a trick of the trade, right?
Yeah, the reason I put that in there was because I am very fascinated with that era of stand-up, which I call the pre-microphone era of stand-up. So there's a lot been written about Artemus Ward and his deadpan style, but he had to be at least loud on some level because he was playing to 1,500 people without a microphone in the 1800s. So when I read that Burt Williams quote, I was like, oh, he can feel it as a performer and he won't move off that spot.
Yeah, I'm always impressed with actors on stage that manage to just belt out those lines with emotion. The Lyceum Movement, what was indicative of the Lyceum Movement? What was that all about?
Well, it was incredible. It was basically before there was a lot of higher education, or higher education was just for religious people or the elites, that people wanted to educate themselves. And instead of without a public school system that came about much later, they would go to these lectures. And sometimes they were free, sometimes they were a nickel, sometimes they were 50 cents. And they would have an expert on botany. They would have an expert on the Revolutionary War. They'd have experts on anything, Greek history, mythology. And that's how people, it's very similar to what's happening now with TED Talks. And in a way, I feel like, and this is something I've never said out loud before, this is an exclusive, I feel like people are sort of doing it on YouTube now. They're sort of putting out historical videos that are well produced, that people can get a whole sense of exactly what happened at that time by watching a video. So they were basically like hour lectures, maybe hour 20-minute lectures.
Any specific YouTubers that you're watching or enjoying?
Oh, that's a great question. No, but I keep flipping around and finding people that put up really detailed historical videos that I find extremely captivating and as good as anything I would have seen or heard of in college. I think it's really elite level education you can get on YouTube these days, as well as a lot of garbage.
The forefathers of American stand-up comedy, you break it down to the four: Artemus Ward, Mark Twain, Burt Williams, and Will Rogers, who was basically like a modern-day Trevor Noah. He's not a member of any organized political party. He's a Democrat. A great line. And he was really the first comedian to make fun of a president to a president. Did not know that before reading this.
Absolutely. He's very much a bridge comedian, because he starts out in Wild West shows, which were something very popular at the turn of the century. And by the end, he's a movie star, like you would know today, like Will Ferrell or something like that. So he's a movie star. He has a radio show, and he was very popular doing daily newspaper articles, a column every day. So he was really an insanely popular comedian. And like you said, one of his main areas was political comedy. And it's very gentle compared to what Trevor does or what, any of the late night hosts do, Stephen Colbert in particular. Now it's much harsher and more partisan is the way I would describe it.
Yeah, right.
But he was the start of that. And there's just great footage of him making Franklin Roosevelt laugh. And, he helped Hoover's campaign. And he's just an icon. And then he dies in the most horrific way possible.
Yeah, right at the start.
Yeah, plane crash. But if you think about it, this is just at the start of air travel. So it must have really freaked out everyone. It was like, oh, my, okay, this is the worst possible way to go. And it was, it was like a president of the United States had died. They lowered the flags, the half mask, in all federal buildings. NBC and NBC and CBS stopped broadcasting during his funeral. Movies stopped showing their movies for 2 minutes of silence. I mean, it's hard to imagine someone that popular. And now he's pretty much forgotten for the most part.
That's true. That's true. And I love how you had the timeline at the end of the book, a sort of a cliff notes of this book.
I love your compliments. Can you talk to me more during
absolutely,
the day?
Absolutely.
I'm not feeling good about myself.
You know, Frank Fay is very responsible for what we enjoy as modern stand-up. I'd never heard the term monologist before when describing a comedian. But going back 1900, 1925, the vaudeville era.
Yes.
Frank Fay, very influential in how we enjoy comedy today.
Right, because he had this crazy popular run as an MC at the top theater at the time. Old timers will still remember this. It was called The Palace. The theater still exists. It's in New York City. And so to play The Palace was to play the top theater in all of vaudeville. And it would be the equivalent of now, like, having a Netflix special or something like that. It's hard to describe. But he sort of invented being this very casual MC before Frank Fay, and there was other comedians of that era, but he was the most prominent, who didn't use ethnic humor to base his comedy on. So everyone was doing ethnic characters very much. I say it like in the Marx Brothers, right? You read that in the book. Like, those are based on ethnic Irish, German, and Italian characters. But he was just like, I'm just going to be a regular guy in a sharp suit, being a funny dude Living by My Wits, and people went nuts for it. And guess who watched him? A young Bob Hope. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I can do comedy this way, not the old style. So now people think of Bob Hope as couldn't be more old-fashioned comedian. But when he was starting out, he was at the vanguard of a new alternative style of comic.
And it's a very interesting reading that he had a group of gag writers running for him 24/7. That must have cost quite a bit of money, I'm thinking, even back then. Incredible.
No, there's just legendary stories of those guys getting phone calls in the middle of the night like, oh, I'm at a benefit for cystic fibrosis. I need a joke. And like they're like, I'm here with my wife. Get it. Yeah, so that's what, but those were very well. He paid most of his salary, his radio salary, for those writers.
Mm-hmm. But he wasn't the first American performer to entertain U.S. combat troops overseas. That title belongs to Elsie James.
It's not James, it's Janice.
Janice James?
I don't know if you get a misprint.
I'm sorry, Elsie Janice. I can't even read my own writing. It's Elsie Janice, yes. Did not know this, and this is a very important part of American history.
Well, it's an important part of, and of the military. This is before there was even something called a USO. And she was in World War One, and obviously, I don't know if you saw the movie 1917. That is a brutal inch-by-inch combat with a lot of mustard gas was used. I mean, and it was just an incredibly brutal conflict. And she was over there doing a show and decided to entertain the troops. And that's, she's the first one to go overseas and entertain the boys, way before Bob Hope and Martha Ray and all of those others who followed in her footsteps. She's a real trailblazer. I'm shocked there's not been a movie about her.
That will be. I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. Yeah. There's so much going on there. You've got the war. You've got, a woman overseas. It's the pioneer of, early American comedy. There's definitely the material there. I'm sure you and Judd Apatow might jump on that at some point. More pioneers. Fred Allen, who you described as a brilliant, yet he seemed to despise his own industry.
Well, I can't believe that research.
I mean, where are you getting that research from? I mean, did you read?
Well, because he wrote two books. He wrote one book about his days on radio and another book about his days. It's in the bibliography. And I read both those books as a kid. And he really didn't like the comedic confinement of radio, even though it made him a very wealthy guy and known around the world. And he much preferred vaudeville and entertaining people one-on-one, direct to the audience. And he was just a very dour guy who was just a brilliant comedy mind. And first of all, thank you for bringing him up at all. Like, I've done a few of these podcasts sort of talking about my book. No one yet has mentioned Fred Allen except you. So I really appreciate it.
Well, he's a pioneer. And as you said, ahead of his time. And Jack Benny. His ability to edit, too. That's such an important element of comedy. And you make sure to emphasize that he was a great editor.
He kept talking about it. Time and time again. Because he was very much like, I don't know if you know the sitcom Seinfeld. He wasn't like the funny, crazy character in the middle of these sitcoms. He was a reactor. And so he sort of had a sixth sense. I don't know if that came off, but that's the number six. And he just had the ability to know what would work for him and what wouldn't work. And a lot of people ask him, he's like, I don't write any of these scripts, but the one thing I do is I can edit them. I know what will fit and work for me. So, I'm so glad you caught that.
I wonder what you think of the YouTubers now.
I don't know. He might be delighted by him. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? He likes young comedians. He put Johnny Carson on his show early on before anyone else. He put the Smothers Brothers on his show before a lot of people. So he liked young comics.
You know, there's so many women pioneers in comedy that you chronicle in this book.
Besides Elsie Janice, yes.
Yeah, Minnie Pearl, for instance.
Yeah, I know. She always gets overlooked, I think, because there's honestly, I think, and I might get in trouble for this, I think there's a little bit of an elitism because she was primarily a country western comedian and performed, you know, in Nashville and in the South. And I think people tend to segregate that as like, oh, that's just, you know, hee-haw kind of level. This isn't, you know, sophisticated stuff like what Joan Rivers might be doing or something like that. And I just disagree with that thesis. So I give her a lot of credit. She, since 1940, she had an amazing career. Yeah.
That's remarkable.
And can I say something else? There's a comedian today named Chandra. God, I'm blanking on a little last name now. And she used to work at the Grand Ole Opry doing an impression of Minnie Pearl. And then she became a great comedian herself.
Oscar Levant is noted here in the book as a, you know, probably the first confessional comedian. And it, that's a very modern take on comedy. When was this, the 50s, 60s, late 50s, 60s?
Is it the late 50s, early 60s? Mm-hmm. And so glad you caught that at all. No one, again, no one else has brought that up when I've spoken to them. He is... he was, you know, he was a drug addict, and then he was a prescription pain addict, drug addict, and he went through shock therapies, and he would talk about and get laughs doing all of this stuff. And so, and that became, I think, the overall theme of the book, and I think you got it, Greg, but it's just that comedians have been doing comedy, that kind of style of comedy, for a long time, and Fred Allen was doing meta comedy 50 years before Steve Martin was making fun of Joe.
Yeah, I didn't realize this before reading the book.
Yeah.
Just did not know it. It's like American jazz, you know, it's the birthplace of comedy.
Thank you. Oh, Chandra Pierce, that's her name. I couldn't remember her name. It just popped in. She was the one, she's a very popular, she's a clean Christian comedian and has incredible following. But she started out doing an impression of Minnie Pearl. It's just a great legacy story.
George Collin built an act during this period, I believe during the 60s. Now, you're working with some of his material on a future show, show for HBO. It's going to be coming up here, a documentary with Judd. And apparently, George has left a lot of material for you to sift through.
Yes, he produced 14 hours of HBO specials.
That's incredible.
And that, after he had 6 albums before that even came out. So, yes, he's ridiculously prolific, maybe the most.
I got to tell you, I really enjoyed the podcast where you talk about the alternative and urban. Actually, it's more based upon the alternative acts, Jenny Garofalo. And that was a very interesting part of the book, too. That's what piqued my interest, because that's my era, the 90s. And I grew up with so many of those. That was really just a golden age. And I never really knew the history of Chris Rock's Bring the Pain album. That was fascinating to read. You could tell that he had something to prove. And you really got that sense from it, from reading this book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, that's one of the most mind-blowing, incendiary, it's jaw-dropping hours of comedy ever done. Yeah. And you
it's
know,
my favorite of the whole decade, that album. It was really
special. Oh, that's incredible. Yeah, I feel like it was the performance of his lifetime, to tell you the truth.
Absolutely.
And I can't believe you had that on the app, but he's never done that routine since. That was, he retired it that night. And it's, I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just so thrilling to watch that happen. And you're like, oh. And then I especially liked what he did at the beginning. And on the, I mean, I know you listen to the CD, or, but on the special, he had comedy albums of comedians that he loved.
Yeah, he put himself in that category.
Yes. And so I just loved it. As someone who's a history of stand-up guy, I was like, oh, he gets it. This is incredible. There's a,
I love that you mentioned Jonathan Katz, too, because he just had a streaming special. And he's still funny. He's still very, very funny. He's still doing the same character as Dr. Katz, but it hasn't aged.
I know. He's you know, he's so smart.
Yes.
Yeah, he's such a great joke writer. I remember when he used to do stand-up before Dr. Katz, before any of that.
Really?
In the 80s, we used to do stand-up together. Yeah.
You've been around a while there.
Okay, you don't have to rub it in. It's not nice. We're trying to have a good interview.
Sam Morrill, Bo Burnham, These are breakouts on YouTube. You touch on this towards the end of the book, the digital domain, digital era. Sebastian Maniscalco's four sold-out Madison Square Garden shows. Incredible. I actually interviewed him right after that.
You did?
Yeah, I fucked it up. I really screwed up that interview. I kept him waiting. I was late.
Oh, no.
And but it was an incredible achievement. And same for Sam Morril, who was a bit bitter about being turned down by everybody, but he killed it on YouTube.
I can't tell you how many times I've recommended that special. Not one person I've recommended it to, all ages, all ethnicities, all sexes. Everyone's like, wow,
yeah,
that is something else, what he did. That, yeah, I think it's called I Got This, and he self-produced it, and it has over 5 million views.
It's incredible.
As we speak, and it's still going.
And who turned it down? Everybody.
I'm not sure. I assume Netflix and all of those people, like what I would assume, but, you know, but I just love it. I love that he did it, and it's inspiring is the word I would use to describe it, Greg, inspiring.
You're a bit of a renaissance man. You've got this new documentary coming up. I'm curious about the future and what you have planned for us going ahead into 2022. And I loved you on Curb. It's one of my favorite episodes. The sweaters, the sweater vest. It was a special. That was a special one.
Wait, are you talking about the one where he breaks my glasses?
Yes, and you wear that sweater too when you're staring at the wire. That's
yes.
A special moment.
It's so interesting because I think of myself as this very easygoing, casual, very positive kind of guy, and I play the worst person in the world on Curb. Just like, maybe there's something about me that I don't quite realize.
Yeah. You're a very convincing asshole on this show.
Thank you. I mean, the worst. The worst. I love it. Oh, my God. This is so fun. Thank you for reading the book. I feel like you got a lot out of it.
I did, and I'm enjoying the podcast. I hope it continues. There's so much to explore, and you go off on tangents, and I really enjoy that. You know, stand-up seems to be the basis for a lot of our entertainment today.
A lot, but there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of sketch comedians and people who don't do stand up or, you know, I don't even know quite at the end how to describe the front facing comedians that kind of like do a character or do a little monologue into their camera and put it up on TikTok or something like that. So, I mean, they're definitely comedians. I don't know if they're stand up because they're not in front of a crowd, but who knows? I mean, like I said, as you read in the book, adapting to technology is a big part of the job description.
I didn't even touch on the 90s urban movement in comedy.
Yes. And, oh, my God.
I remember that era. I remember it so
well. Yeah, and I feel like that's your domain. What do you remember about? Nothing about me.
Well, BET specials, Def Jam. Yeah. There seemed to be a warmth about that era that I miss. I genuinely miss it.
Have you ever seen any of Cat Williams' specials?
Yes.
Yeah, he's incredible. I wish I had written more about him. I just think he's
he's still at it. He got arrested a couple years back, but he's still touring. He played here a show, an impromptu show here in Portland. I believe he got arrested here, and then he did a show. God, he was funny.
I love it.
God, he was
funny. I love the whole thing. I mean, I say it in the back of my book, but I'm really like, From an open micer all the way up to Chappelle or Amy Schumer or Mulaney or Bill Burr, I love all of it. All of it.
Yeah, it comes across. Thanks so much, Wayne. Really appreciate it. You literally wrote the book on stand-up comedy. So much thanks to you. We needed this documented. And congratulations. The book's been well reviewed, well received.
Yeah, it's doing okay. It's making a nice, it's doing okay. Yeah, it's really very gratifying just because some people are like, well, did you put people's routines in there? I'm like, no, because I feel like a comedian's routine on paper is never as good as seeing it or hearing it.
Right.
That's
right.
My
historian,
take.
A professor. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And that's no joke. That's a real thing.
Yeah, for real. For real.
The Colin documentary, I'm really looking forward to that because he was a big part of my young adulthood, would you call it?
Yeah, yeah. Of course, you saw, I'm sure, those HBO specials.
And yeah, he was always on. Seemed like
he was
a series.
Right to the end. He had an an autobiography that was co-written by a gentleman named Tony Hendra. And we have, and they did hours and hours and hours and hours of interviews. And we have all of those. So that's, so a lot of this, there's a lot of times where he's talking to Tony, he's like, well, this can't be in the book. And then he would tell a story. I was like, oh, well, this might be in the documentary.
Oh, that's fantastic. Looking forward to it, Wayne. Thanks so much. Really appreciate you taking the time.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you later, Greg.
Cheers.
And thank you for listening to the Portland Podcast. I'm your host, Gregory Day. I produce and edit the show. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me at greg@pdxpodcast.com. We'll be back with a brand new episode very shortly. See you then.